So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is coming back to your TV screen. Well, only if you have HBO Max. I don't even have a TV, but boy, am I going to find a way to watch this. I think there's a free 7-day trial of HBO. I'm literally just going to watch because I want to see this Fresh Prince of Bel-Air reunion. Why are we so excited? Just for a little nostalgia's sake here, listen to this.
How my life got flipped, turned upside down, and I'd like to take a minute, just sit right there. I'll tell you how I became the prince of a town called Bel-Air. In West Philadelphia, born and raised, on the playground is where I spent most of my days. Chilling out, maxing, relaxing, all cool and all, shooting some b-ball outside of the school.
When you a couple know of you're guys totally dancing right now, too. That's right, Will Smith is back, Carlton, most of the rest of the crew will be there for this reunion marking 30 years of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air that aired from 1990 to 1996. Welcome to Trending. This is our marriage hour. We're going to be discussing how to discern marriage. 5 simple ways to love your wife even when you're busy. We'll discuss this phrase, wait till you're ready to get married, have children, and how this has done some damage to my generation and other generations as well in terms of how happy, lonely, childless we may or may not be. We'll also discuss renewing the I do you took at the altar when you got married. Welcome to the Marriage Hour. It's great to be with you. So Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is coming back with this 30 year later reunion. And I'm looking at this and it's trending all over social media. The reunion will be November 19th, available on HBO Max. And I'm excited. I'm excited to hear the cast, the characters talk about being back in their old set of the living room from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And I'm thinking about the story. Why is it that we love Fresh Prince of Bel-Air? It was still good TV. It was great TV. It was about a troubled youth who was sent to live with his wealthy aunt and uncle. It tells a story about a father figure for Fresh Prince, for Will Smith. It centers around a living room. It's a story that people fell in love with, and today, still, if they can put their hands on it, they love to watch the reruns of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Let me know. I'm posting this on social media. Why do you think that so many people love this show? Why is it trending on social media? I think it's because The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is truly a family matter. It's a family story. It's a story that centers around the importance of having role models in our lives. And, you know, it comes at a time, I think, of much needed nostalgia. You know, this has been a rough year in terms of the government restrictions from COVID and everything that has come about because of COVID-19 in 2020. And here we are being reminded of how important the family is, how important it is when we have good media, good entertainment that focuses around real relationships with some comedy in there. It was interesting listening to some of the previews leading up to some of the snippets of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and they're talking, they're so excited. They talked about how the last time they were all together in that living room set, they were crying, and now they were coming in giggling and joyful to see each other yet again. One of the actresses made a few very striking comments about The Fresh Prince and the reach that they had, but one person is also missing from this entire reunion, and that's the deceased James Avery. James Avery, you may know, died back in 2013 after some complications with open heart surgery. He was 68 years old. He played Uncle Phil, and it was a heartbreak for the cast of the show when he died. Will Smith talked about losing, even in his personal life, a father figure. Now, it's interesting because Will Smith, and I'll play this clip now, talked about how he admired James Avery. Listen to this.
James is the heart of the show.
James Avery was this 6'4" Shakespearean beast, and I wanted him to think I was good.
How come he don't want me, man? And I fall into his arms at the end of the scene, and he's holding me, and the shot pans off, and he whispered in my ear, "Now that's acting."
I didn't realize how many people we were reaching.
There will always be a piece of all of us in that living room.
Our show meant Black excellence to people. The excellence was the way that we loved each other.
Wow, this is a profound clip. That 30 seconds there centers around the heart of the show. Here we start with the Fresh Prince himself talking about how on a personal level, James Avery was a father figure to him, and how James Avery provided that affirmation even within the realm of acting, within their own scenes. And so we see not only was there a father figure in the show that Will Smith needed, but there was a father figure behind the scenes, that affirmation that was so important to him. And you have one of the other actresses talking about how everything centered around the living room. It happened in a living room, a family, interacting, engaging. And that is so fundamental. You know, I think for most families, it's the kitchen, not necessarily the living room. You know, not all of us can have a butler that takes us out of the kitchen and cooking. So for them, it was their living room. But for most of us, it's that kitchen that people are coming in and out of, food, the heart of the home, the nourishment, the conversations. And then what happens in that clip at the very end? They talked about how Black excellence was the way we loved each other. That's a profound statement right there. Black excellence was the way we loved each other. I have to bring it in and mention it for a second. This goes against, this is the antithesis of the pillars of the Black Lives Matter, like actual pillars on their website of what they stand for. They stand for the breakdown of the family. They're anti-family. And so I think that this show, the 30-year reunion, and focusing on that living room, that father figure, and again, I'll quote it, Black excellence was the way we loved each other. This is an important reminder for everyone as to why we love Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, why we can't wait for this reunion. And I really do look forward to watching this, and I'll tell you what my thoughts are. If you watch Fresh Prince of Bel-Air Reunion, let me know what you think. It's available November 19th on HBO Max. You can get a 7-day free trial. I wouldn't recommend anything else on HBO, but I think that it might be worth just getting that free trial as long as you remember to cancel ahead of time. You're listening to Trending with Timory. It's our marriage hour. It's great to be with you. And I've been really looking forward to today's show because a lot of this has to do with tips and tricks for strengthening marriages. We're going to talk about renewing the I do of your marriage. I have been asking married couples, what was the most important part of discerning marriage? What mattered most to you? So we're going to hear thoughts, ideas, and key things to help you in preparing others to get married, but also perhaps yourself. Maybe you're thinking about walking down that aisle, or maybe you're even just thinking, what kind of person would I be interested in dating? First, I want to dive into 5 simple ways to love your wife, gentlemen, even when you're busy. There is this blog at allprodad.com. And I thought that it was an incredible blog because it started out by the writer actually acknowledged that he and his spouse had been through marriage counseling. And so this is someone who's been there, has been through challenges, needing to make changes. And he's sharing, here are some of the things that have worked for us, that have been good, that we've been encouraged to do. The number one thing was to have a routine check-in. And he mentions this from the perspective of going to bed together, at this, basically, and having that 15 minutes before going to bed. We've talked about it here on the show, how important it is for couples to try to go to bed at the same time, because that's a good time to talk, to interact, to break down the day, to look ahead to what's going on, and just make sure the other person's doing well. I know for my husband and I, we love to sit down and really try to make sure that we have that extra time at breakfast to actually sit down face to face and make that priority for those few minutes rather than quickly drinking the shake and running out the door. And we pause to pray before we eat. We're both at the table. And all of this essentially centers around communication. And so when you sit down and have those regular check-in routines, make sure that you ask questions and legitimately ask the question, mean it. Don't just ask something for the sake of asking it. You know, I've learned that, especially when things are difficult, you know, don't just ask, how was your day? I really love this question because sometimes your day can be rotten. There can be a lot of mundane monotony. I will start to ask this question. What did you learn today? And this is a one I like thrown up against me, because if I haven't learned anything today about myself, about the world, anything interesting, my brain is probably mush and I probably had a difficult day, to be quite frank. And to be honest, I think all of us have had a difficult day if we've not made some sort of effort to learn something. Another thing that I think is important with this routine check-in is there has to be some level of honesty and accountability with regard to how we're using our cell phones, because cell phones can be a real killer of communication for all of us, married or not. And so there needs to be a subtle and loving way to let our spouses know, hey, you just got home, you're on your phone. It's time to chat, it's time to visit, it's time to go to bed. You know, using those gentle ways of communication, not criticism, to make sure that the door to communication is open with each other rather than the world around us via our phones. Second simple way to love your wife when you're busy, and I guess we could just swing this in both directions as well, is to encourage her to do something she enjoys. Now, I changed this because it was originally do something for her, and I'm so sick of the words of like me time and, you know, the phrases like that. You know, you're married, you have a family, it's not about you. It's about making sure, yes, that you take care of yourself, you do things you love, but it's not about me time and getting that alone and, you know, reprieve from the world. It's human time. It's human development, taking the time to pray, to work on some of those things that edify us, those habits and conversations and reading, even if it's just a couple minutes before bed, wherever we can fit it in. But here at All Pro Dad, it actually encourages, maybe you buy your spouse a gift card for a favorite coffee shop she can go to that she enjoys, a massage, for clothes, to something to do with a hobby or something that she enjoys. The bottom line is that perhaps it's just a matter, especially for busy parents, especially with lots of kids, a busy schedule, trying to help make the time for her to do something she enjoys. Not the me time, because I think the me time gets it wrong. It's about doing things you love, even if that perhaps does include the kids, but it's still refocusing to make sure that there's that edification. Just like that question I said a minute ago of what did you learn today? Making sure we're not going numb throughout the day. Number three says check in during the day. Now this could be simple with a call, maybe even just a brief text, a note in a lunch pail, setting a reminder on your phone to check in, say hello, I'm thinking of you, I love you. Simple ways. I think that this is important though, because think about it. St. Paul in his letter to the Ephesians chapter 5 talks about how wives are called to be submissive to their husbands and husbands are called to love their wives. Well, I think St. Paul knew something about human nature, that us wives have a tendency to nag and pick and criticize, and that husbands have a tendency to kind of just go with the flow and forget to show their love and dedication at times. And so this is a really good reminder to check in during the way, to find creative ways to love your spouse. And sometimes it's simple as using those words, which is another one of those four simple ways to love your spouse. Use words. Say I love you. Write it down. Say it face to face. Make eye contact. Again, this doesn't just apply to husbands loving their wives, but hey, those five, you know, kind of guidelines and tips can be pretty helpful. The last one that is highly recommended from All Pro Dad is to set a weekly date. And I know especially experienced, seasoned married couples are like, wah, wah, wah. Tell me when I'm going to have time. Tell me if they're going to be interested. Tell me if it's just going to be me. You know, yeah, right. And maybe you even feel uncomfortable doing it. But as this dad said in the article, he said, our counselor kept telling us over and over again to go on that weekly date. And he'd ask, hey, did you guys do it? They still hadn't, week after week. And he finally ends up, the counselor ends up saying to them, nothing important happens by accident. Isn't that true? We can't just expect that we'll love someone and, you know, there'll just be, you know, accidental ways that we just kind of stay tuned out and still love a person. There really does require, love is an action. It takes intentionality. And setting that weekly date means that you have to do something about it. And he said, you know, it wasn't me that finally took the initiative. It was my wife who scheduled it. With regard to these dates, be creative. Doesn't necessarily have to necessarily mean you leave the kids behind. I think that that's sometimes a confusing part. It could be, you know, you're setting aside time after they go to bed. It could be that you're doing something different for one evening. We're going to talk about cooking together and how good it is as a form of discernment before getting married, but also a good thing to do when you're married. My producer, one of the guys, is shaking his head right now. I think he's thinking, come on, I just want a wife who's going to cook for me, man. I don't know what he's thinking, but he's shaking his head at me when I talk about cooking together. Gentlemen, you can cook too. You don't have to be responsible fully for the meal, but stay tuned because there are actually some really neat things that cooking together can do for a relationship before marriage and during marriage. But here's one more thing I want to mention. With regard to setting that weekly date, this is an incredible opportunity to talk, to have a conversation. Perhaps you're not quite hitting those routine daily check-ins, but you can at least look forward to that set aside time for the two of you to have that meal together. Or maybe it's just a dessert, or maybe it's an hour or two of playing a board game. I don't know. Whatever it is that you like and enjoy, but it's a matter of being creative and knowing what the other person likes. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. If you'd like to follow the podcast, you can head over to relevantradio.com/trending to subscribe. You don't have to miss a single marriage hour where we talk about everything from discerning marriages, dating, relationships. We even have our matchmaker here every couple weeks. Now let's talk about getting to the good stuff. We just talked about date night and how important it is, and I want to talk about it a little bit more, but within the context of renewing the I do. I've been reading a lot about the importance of renewing those marital vows, and we're not going to get so much into the theology of it today, but more so the choice to acknowledge that when we said I do, we said something very important. Or when you say I do, you're saying I choose you. You're saying, I love you. You're saying, I see you as a person in front of me that I'm responsible for. And you're also saying, I will sacrifice for you. I mentioned St. Paul's letter to the Ephesians chapter 5. What's the mission of the man? The mission of the man is to lay down his life for the bride the same way that Christ laid down his life for the church. So if you're interested in marrying someone, we're going to be talking about discerning marriage in just a little bit, you should be willing to die for that person, especially husbands. It's written into your body, the strength, the sacrifice that men can make. This is part of the natural priesthood, the universal priesthood that all of us participate in. We're called to make sacrifices. And so in renewing the I do, I mentioned I wanted to talk a little bit more about date night. Well, that's part of it because there are a lot of couples who say, well, I feel uncomfortable. It's not really my thing. We've not done that in a long time. Listen, I've not gone out on a date since I hunted you 30, 40, I don't know, 20 years ago. Yes, I hunted you. But here's the reality. I've come back to it over and over again. What that counselor said, nothing important happens by accident. And when you choose to go on a date night, no matter how well your marriage is going or how challenging it might be at a time, there are a few things that happen. You're choosing to be intentional with your spouse. You're choosing to be generous with them by planning something in advance, by giving your time, by going outside of your comfort zone, perhaps, if you're in a place in your marriage where that just doesn't really feel nice. But you can also do it in a simple way that's thoughtful and considerate of your spouse. That's why the date night is this goal that so many counselors and therapists in the church recommend all the time, because they're recognizing the date night. It's not that, oh, hey, honey, we're going on a date. This is cute. This is sweet. It's going back to the good old days. It's that you are intentionally, generously, simply, and thoughtfully doing something to renew the I do by saying, I choose you. I love you. I see you. And I sacrifice for you. Another couple of tips for renewing the I do. One is something that I've been told even before I got married when I was dating, is to have a couple's mentor for feedback. No matter what state in a relationship or marriage you may be in, it's helpful to have a healthy couple who's just a little ahead of you in life and stage of the marriage and family to really give you an example, for you to ask questions, to really watch. And to be a sponge of learning when you look at their marriage for do's and don'ts. But hopefully, if it's a helpful and healthy couple, There are more do's and don'ts that you'll see. Another one is getting together with other married couples your age or in the same kind of a place that you are with your family and having fun. Sitting around and eating dinner, making food together teaches you to appreciate your spouse as you see him or her interacting with other couples, sharing about challenges. You begin to admire your spouse within the context of friendship as they share about how they've handled certain situations or how they handle communicating, interacting with you and others. So I encourage you, perhaps you need to spice up that marriage and renew the I do. I have some homework for you. This Advent, or even Fridays or Wednesdays during the full liturgical year, sacrifice for your spouse, pray for them, offer mass for them. Use some of these tips to start being more intentional to renew the I do in your marriage. The Relevant Radio Studio Line is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters. Information about employment opportunities and their flexible premium life insurance plans are available at relevantradio.com/forester.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Coming up, I'll be discussing discerning marriage. What's the most important part of discerning marriage with a person? I've thrown this question up on social media and tons of married people have responded, and I'm excited to share these key tips and ideas to really make that decision about whether or not you're going to spend the rest of your life with this person and have some babies. Before we go there, though, I think this really relates to the same topic. I was following or sent to me on Twitter the other day. There was a post after last week's show where my husband and I sat down and talked about why marriage numbers are on the decline. And someone said, you need to check out this Twitter feed. It's from Barf Captain. I posted the beginning of it on social media. Barf Captain, come on. but this is a very enlightening Twitter feed. I think he posts something like 20 different tweets in the actual stream that are very enlightening. But also then to hear the responses from people. So here's the deal. The boomer generation has told the next generation, wait till you're ready to get married and to have children. Now, when I got engaged a few years ago, I remember a lot of people in that boomer generation would look at me and be like, are you sure you want to do that? Are you sure? Like, they'd kind of have this sour face and very cynical attitude about marriage. And here I am in my blissful joy about being engaged. Finally, we waited so long. And overwhelmingly, other than, you know, close friends and family, most people had a very negative attitude about my getting engaged. And then I became a total anomaly to them because they realized, wait, you're not living with him? What? I mean, you don't engage in premarital sex? It was very confusing. It was like I became a science experiment where people would like, I remember teaching Pilates and being in the Pilates studio setting, like all these people, you know, secular, semi-religious, religious, would ask me questions so kind of in depth. And it was so entertaining for me to have these conversations. But this boomer generation comment about how so many have said, even some in Gen X have said, wait till you're ready to get married. And I would say a lot of Gen X have said, are you sure you want to get married? Are you sure you want to do that? It's created a lot of confusion for people. And Barf Captain put up on Twitter an excellent feed on this. And he talked about so many great comments. One of those is that commonly the response is when someone is having a baby at a young age, even within the context of marriage, someone will go, she's so young. Her whole life was in front of her. And they act as if this woman's life is over. And so what's been said? Well, Barf Captain says this. They were told, delay love and family for staring at a screen for a mega corporation and then going home to watch TV for hours. This is true. People are told, have a career. Start your life. Well, what do you do? Barf Captain on social media is pretty honest about it. I'm sorry, I'm just going to keep going there with this Twitter account. It's on my social media, but he's honest. when you do this, you basically end up finding yourself staring at a screen for many hours for a mega corporation and then going home to stare at another screen by yourself. But then what about having children? Some have said, and in fact, many, mentor age adults have said, just wait, do it on your own timing with regard to having kids. Well, the truth of the matter is, and this is posted on this Twitter feed, your uterus is more likely to give up in your 30s if it's not ever fertilized in your 20s. Not that you can't have children in your 30s, but you're less likely to as you delay the process. The reality is that as women, our bodies are in prime shape and condition, and the health of our eggs is at its prime right around that 18-year-old range. And this is a whole nother topic for another conversation, having kids young, because it's the healthiest, and people talk all the time about safe birth. Well, it's actually healthiest and safest to have kids younger, and even younger than we would like to discuss in those 20s, younger than that. Again, that's an entirely different conversation, but it's interesting because another comment that was made in this that's so true. The reality is that it used to be people got married much younger than they do today. They had children at a much earlier age, and they had more children at an earlier age, and they were in poorer circumstances than most people who are questioning marriage and children. They didn't have a lot. And yet they made it through. In fact, they enjoyed it. They had fun. Not that there weren't bumps and challenges along the way, but they loved their families and they didn't wait for the perfect circumstances. As we have been told over and over again, wait till you're ready to get married, till you have the right financial circumstances, the right car, the right income level. Here's something that came up on the Twitter feed that was incredibly profound. And I want you to really chew on this one. Careers don't exist, is what the barf captain on social media said. He said, careers don't exist. They're just jobs and they're boring. I thought that was a very kind of turnkey moment to listen to. We talk so often about having a career, getting set up on this path, but we forget to emphasize that we work to live. We do not live to work. In other words, our whole purpose in life isn't just to work. Work is to help provide what is necessary for us to get by day to day. What's his name? From Dirty Jobs. I'm forgetting his name. Mike. Oh man, I'm forgetting his name right now. But I'm getting mouthed too. I don't have the chat up by my producer here. But Mike Rowe, is that it? Mike Rowe, there we go. I was reading your lips here. Mike Rowe from Dirty Jobs talks about how, sometimes the greatest opportunity for a job is doing something that someone else doesn't want to do. And that's a great way to provide for your family. And with time, you grow to appreciate it. There's meaning in working because we see that we're contributing not just to the world, but to our families, to our well-being, to our survival. And this workaholism and this career track can get in the way of understanding that a job is for the sake of living. It's not our purpose in life. Now, this is where we see it. It gets a little sad, and I'll have a story about this that you may remember me sharing before. On the Twitter feed, it said, my generation barely has siblings or cousins to relate to. Our parents' quote responsibility had 1 to 2 kids and quote responsibility chased career. Isn't this true? I was at the grocery store last year with my sister, and we were at one of those bougie grocery stores that has a smoothie bar. We're waiting for smoothies, and as we're waiting for smoothies, the girl who's making our smoothie is so engaged in talking to my sister and I, and she said, wow, are you guys like best friends? Are you guys twins or something? Like, what are you guys? And I said, oh, this is my younger sister. I think that she might have called us twins or something. I don't know. I take it as a total compliment, although I don't know if I want to look like 10, 12 years younger than I do. I'm not sure. So maybe I shouldn't take that as a compliment. But she was so enamored by our relationship. She said, wow, I've always wanted to have a sister. I've always wondered what it's like. You guys have such a special relationship. That is so cool. And she's just looking at us with almost this whimsical, curious expression, what would it be like? Now, I've been very blessed. I've grown up with three siblings I love dearly, cousins, extended family. Yet many people maybe have never had a sibling, don't even know their cousins if they have any. And what has stood out about this? Many people are longing and hungry, like that girl at the juice counter at the grocery store, for a good, strong, authentic relationship, friendship with someone else. And so we have a responsibility to understand that all of these things that some of the older generations have said about delaying marriage, waiting till it's right, hasn't really made them happier, nor has it made us happier. They're talking about loving their grand dogs, and they keep asking and harassing their kids about when they're going to have children. But in reality, their children aren't having children because they were told to wait till the timing is right and things are perfect. We're at a point where millennials are starting to turn 40 next year, and the marriage rates and fertility rates are low. We're seeing even lower rates for Gen Z that is just starting to come in to adulthood. So the question is, what next? I think that we have a few things we need to be honest about. Honest about the regret of lost family life, marriage, and children. Acknowledge the loneliness and the desire for children and family that is so prevalent in so many people's lives. We're seeing some of the biggest and most successful movie stars and media career people who are looking back and they're saying they regretted that they didn't have more children or any children at all. They long for that human connection and interaction. So what does this say? Career isn't everything. It's just a job. It's a lot of screen time, and as was said in this Twitter feed, it's a lot of screen time, staring time for your employer and not for yourself and your family. At what point are we going to shift our focus here of getting screen time and quality time with family over just getting to that point where we're a cog in the machine of a mundane reality that doesn't ultimately bring true happiness? Connections, community, communion with others, self-sacrifice brings happiness. People got married, again, I'm going to say this again, it's important to say, people got married younger and in poorer circumstances for the history of the world, living on the ground, and they were fine. We've got to adjust our way of living. Don't just follow the standard cost of living. Be willing to live perhaps a little simpler, a little more detached from the world. Kids need their parents. And adults need relationships, both with spouses, extended family, and children. But are we willing to make the changes necessary to make that happen? And finally, this is what's so important for us to communicate, and especially people who are married and have children. Having a family and being married is fun. Having kids and siblings around and cousins are a great thing. Having a family teaches us the meaning of life, of being a gift of self for others so that we can ultimately be united to the truest gift of all, God, our Heavenly Father. Being married grows you and challenges you. It's human. You choose either to grow in marriage and family or not to. It's a choice. But are we going to choose ourselves and careers? It really isn't a choice for me, because in the end, we're not happier. Are we going to choose to have a family that makes you, teaches you to learn, to love, to give, to take? A life that's full of sacrifices happily and in challenging ways. Sponsorship for Trending with Tim Ray is provided by Catholic Singles, a dating app that connects single Catholics based on faith, values, and shared interests. More info at CatholicSingles.com.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Mad Event begins Sunday, November 29th. I've been encouraging you. We've done a whole podcast on it to get ready, make your plan, and really take advantage of this liturgical season. You can also sign up to receive Father Rocky's Advent Inspirations. These are short, daily audio reflections designed to help you delve deeper into the beauty of the Advent season. The reflections are emailed to you each morning throughout Advent. They'll help you to start the day with a smile and give you something to ponder. You can sign up for Father Rocky's Advent Inspirations at relevantradio.com/advent or click on the banner on the Relevant Radio app, where I know you love to listen to Trending's podcasts on demand anywhere you go. Hey, Thanksgiving is coming up, Christmas, a lot of vacation time, maybe some extra time on the road in an airplane. So take Trending with you. Catch up. Listen to our happy hours, our marriage hours, all of the topics we discuss having to do with character formation, those tough moral issues, the trends happening in our culture, and how we can respond as Catholics to live virtuous, faith-filled, Christ-centered, and sacramental lives. It's our marriage hour here on Trending. And a topic that's come up a lot in my conversations, and it'll come up tomorrow again when we talk to Dr. Susan Caldwell about her own journey and how she recently received a declaration of nullity for her marriage after 25 years. And what came up in that conversation is the importance of discerning marriage. And we'll talk about it a little bit tomorrow, but I wanted to take this conversation today because it was fascinating to me. I posted on social media, what's the most important part of discerning marriage with a person? I asked married couples to respond. And there were key things that were unanimous across the board that I think we could create our own marriage prep course here with this, because they were solid and they're things that we should be considering before we even date someone. As we're deciding if we want to settle into an actual relationship with someone. And as we begin to ponder whether or not we want to commit to that person when that opportunity to say yes with the ring comes up, or gentlemen, to purchase that ring. By the way, we haven't done a show on saving money for a ring. This is a great topic. I'm putting down some notes if you have any thoughts on saving money for a ring. And hey, even if you're single, it's not too late to have some change set away for when the day comes. In fact, I'm going to a wedding this weekend, my dear friend, and they were engaged within a year of starting to date. By the way, they met online too. I'm just saying, it's out there, it is possible, and it can happen quicker than you think, and you might want to be marriage material before you even start dating the person. So, what's important in discerning marriage? I've heard from hundreds of you over the last couple of days. First and foremost, what came up, and I think this is important, is faith. Are you on the same page? Now, I'm not saying that you can't marry someone who's not Catholic. That is allowed within the church, but you have to agree to raise the children in the faith. Now, faith is such an important aspect because if you want to grow in virtue, if you want to grow in holiness, as one person put it, is this person an impediment or a support when it comes to growing in holiness? I think that's a really great way to think about it. I remember when I was in my first freshman course in college, one of my professors wrote a triangle up on the blackboard. It had nothing to do with the class, had nothing to do with marriage, dating, relationships, but he wanted to help give us some guidance for those dating years that were going to ensue during college. I mean, come on, everyone's hormonal and interested, looking for an MRS degree, you name it. And so he put this triangle up on the board, and at the bottom of one side, he said, here's you, and on the bottom of the other side, here's a person you're dating. The only way you two will ever grow closer together is if you each walk your way up the sides of the triangle, the pyramid, whatever you want to call it, and at the top, that's where you get together, and that's where God is. So if the person that you are dating does not have a faith that's drawing them deeper to our Lord, deeper into a stronger character, into virtue, then that's going to be a really difficult relationship. It could be an impossible marriage one day. And so as long as you are dating, there should be this journey up the sides of the pyramid or the triangle. And I thought that that was such a simple way to look at it. that it really does answer that question of faith. Are we on the same page? Do we share our Catholic faith, or at least do we share in being Christian? Or is there a lack of being on the same page? Is the other person an impediment to my faith? Is the other person jealous when I volunteer or spend additional time at church or in prayer? Do they try to distract me all the time? These are great questions. Another good topic having to do with discernment that came out quite often was essentially family, the extended family, family interaction. Now, people always say that you should look to how a man treats his mother to tell you a thing or two about how he will treat you. I think that's a great example, but also looking at the bigger picture, whether you like it or not, my husband and I were talking about this morning. He said, whether you like it or not, your family upbringing, parents and siblings, they all raised you. They formed you. And so the extended family will say a lot about what you will experience within marriage. For the good, the bad, the ugly, the joyful, all of it. They formed you as a person, and so they will say, getting to know them, quite a bit about what and where you are going in your own relationships. Now, perhaps you came from a very broken family. That's not to discount any future or possibility, but it is something that I think is a very fair and important to keep in mind when discerning marriage. Because it can be a big problem if we don't acknowledge some of those challenges that can come up from family of origin, which also touches on some of the other issues. For example, a big one for some people, because they have a hard time seeing eye to eye, and to be quite frank, my generation, the millennial generation, had little to no guidance in a lot of the research it shows on how to manage money. How to manage money, how to save, how to, you know, plan for the future, how to not just live paycheck to paycheck. This is something I've seen many millennials saying, I don't know how to do this. I think one of the greatest things that I ever had was an allowance. And 10% had to go to God, 10% had to go to savings. And I learned at a very early age, here's what I'm left over with. And even then, I could save for something else, or it could be for fun. You know, you have to kind of plan and begin to understand and teach these money and budgetary elements. But if you have no sense of money, budget, self-control going into marriage, money can be a deal breaker for people. The honesty about student loan debt, honesty about credit card debt. These are things that you have to be on the same page and forthcoming about before marriage. And to be honest, you should have at least some sort of an idea where the other person is at in terms of money, I would say, while dating, before even becoming engaged. Because a lot of people get engaged and they don't know anything about how the other person manages money until after the engagement. Not that you have to share all your personal details about finances while dating, but you should have some conversations there that give you a pretty good idea. So, as we often say, power, sex, money are all three big things that matter a lot to people, can show whether we win or lose in terms of our character, in terms of making it into heaven. So that brings up the topic of chastity. And this is one I didn't see anyone bring up, but I think is very important. What is chastity? What is fidelity? Because we've grown up in a culture where we've seen many broken marriages, infidelity, pornography use, even unchastity while dating or even while marrying, where people have a lack of emotional and physical boundaries that leave them vulnerable ultimately to adultery. We've done a few shows on that. You can check it out on the podcast. And so you need to make sure that you're on the same page understanding the church's teaching on chastity. It's faithfulness to your vocation. If you're single, you're single. You're not married. Sorry, you can't do it with a person you love. Even if you love them, you're not married to them. Well, does that change when you're married? Yeah, that changes. That exclusivity is a fundamental dimension of marriage. And threats to that include, as I mentioned, emotional cheating, physical cheating, as well as pornography and other key issues. Even watching television shows that have, as some people like to say, soft porn, which there's no such thing as soft porn. I can't believe people still try to say that to me. I just shake my head and go, okay, we need to have a bigger conversation if that's where we're going with this. Another couple of things that are important to be on the same page on that many people emphasize, and which is part of the problem with why many people say, wait to get married, because everyone has a different view about children. Are you open to life, and is the person you're dating open to life? Do you have a common vision of your future, big picture, with regard to your marriage and your children? Because that common vision does have to do with kids, how you'll raise them, how you'll discipline them. Being open to the way they will come about in life. This is so important. And so having the conversation that you're on the same page about kids is so important. I think that another important area is virtue. Virtues. I saw over and over again in your responses on social media, all of the different areas that people thought were important when discerning whether or not to marry someone. And I think these things are important whether we're considering someone being our friend, whether or not we're considering going on a date with someone. There are five that I found were most important in my eyes that came up over and over again in your responses on social media. One, is the person respectful? Two, are they humble? Three, do they have compassion? Or are they just a harsh human being? Four, and I think that this could fall into virtue, is there mutual devotion? I'm going to come back to that in just a second, actually. And five, are they honest? I'll repeat those real quick. Are they respectful, humble, compassionate, devoted, and honest? These are all very, very important things to say. And this is where I also come back to that faith question. People ask me all the time, you know, should I marry someone who isn't Catholic? Personally, that's a deal breaker. But I do understand that God can work great miracles and there can be great people who aren't Catholic who we could date. I would at least want to make sure that that person believed in God. For me, that would be it's they have to be Catholic, but the base denominator has to be they believe in God. You should at least have that standard, at the very least. And if they believe in God, are they honest enough, humble enough to seek after truth that you could see them not easily getting there, but making their way there? To that fuller understanding of Jesus Christ, the sacrifice he made on the cross, the fullness of the truth of the sacraments. Because if they're not humble enough, patient enough, respectful enough right now where you could see them making their way there, that should be a big red flag with regard to being on the same page with faith as things progress. But if there's someone who seeks after truth and really does this humbly, that should show you that that is a very good sign that there's going to be growth in their faith. And even perhaps they are Catholic and you're just not on the same page exactly. Do you see that humility? Do you see that desire to grow? That search for truth and meaning? Because if it's there, I think that those are really key indicators that will tell you whether or not that person's going to be an impediment or a support while growing in your faith. Now, I wanted to come back to this mutual devotion. That this isn't just exclusivity within marriage, but when you're discerning whether or not to marry someone, you should know, just to be clear, that they are devoted to you, that they truly do love you. If you in any way doubt their devotion, well, either one, there could be something that could be a red flag that something's going on their part, or there could be something going on emotionally or psychologically for you that is causing doubt, that your doubt could cause a problem on that relationship. So there needs to be a healthy sense of mutual devotion that is seen on both sides, not this like, I could live without you. And this does bring me to one thing I do, although we could say, you know, I could live without you. For me, something that was really important when discerning marriage with my husband and before we got married, and I waited a long time. We talked about this a little bit last week on the show. You can catch the podcast. We waited longer to get married. I waited a long time for him to pop that question. And he admitted last week on the show that was wrong. We waited too long. Again, people say, you know, wait for the circumstances to be right. But there are a lot of circumstances that can make things challenging. But I was at the point in that relationship where I acknowledged, although I love this person and I want to marry him, God, if you have something else in store for me, I'm open to that. And I think that that's an important level of openness that we are meant to have until we become engaged, because it shows a certain level of emotional detachment and physical detachment as well, but at the same time acknowledging this is someone I could marry, that I would love to marry. So we ask, what is love? This is the last virtue I want to touch on. Well, love is a virtue. Love is ultimately, we should think of it as an action word. That action word that calls us to life-giving, self-giving love as seen on the cross. And what do we see on the cross? Christ is bloody, bruised, and beaten. Sacrificial love, as one person commented when talking about discerning marriage, they said, people need to understand when they're thinking about getting married, love has to do with sacrificing, not convenience. Marriage is permanent, and it's going to come with ups and downs and difficulties and quite frankly, to do things that we don't want to do. And so we have to be willing to lay ourselves down, sacrifice what we want, what we desire, in order for a better future, for a better relationship, a better marriage, a better interaction. And so I encourage you, when you're discerning marriage, or perhaps talking to your kids or friends or family members about getting married, all of these things are so important. Faith, family, being on the same page, money, budget, what chastity is, being open to kids, whether or not this person will be an impediment to your growth and holiness or a support. Are they virtuous? Are they seeking truth? What do they believe love is? Is it an action, a means of convenience? Or is it life-giving, self-giving love, sacrificial love? And do they understand that marriage is permanent for life, till death do us part? This has been our Marriage Hour here on Trending. Catch the podcast, share it with a loved one, text the link to it. Just head over to relevantradio.com/trending to share this episode with a loved one.